Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, I'm Kevin McNally and I'm with Chris Gordon on Hellblazer Biz.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening and good night, my lovely audience, wherever you are in the world right now. Welcome to Hellblazer Biz, the show where you get to have your questions answered by your favourite TV and film stars. Hellblazer Biz is brought to you in conjunction with the BS Podcast Network. Sadly, I need to advertise now, but as bringing in such wonderful guests does not come without costs, I've curated a patron scheme where you can either donate $1, $5 or $10 a month. For $1 a month, you get a thank you on the show and site and a thank you email. For $5 a month, you get a special newsletter monthly. And you also get your name listed on the show's patrons list and a shout out on a show. Plus you get some show swag, so bumper sticker, mug or a t-shirt. I'm still decided on that. That'll be available after 3 months. For $10 a month, you get all the previous stuff. Plus a handwritten note on a show postcard from me once a month. So I will actually personally write to you, whether that's a good thing or not. And you can also get to be part of the show as well. So I would put you into a draw with everybody who donates $10 a month for every show. And I'll pull you out of a hat. Whoever's pulled out the hat then gets a chance to get Skype called in the middle of an interview and you can get to ask your questions to the guests themselves. You can find up and set donations on my website, hellblazerbiz.com, and go into the Patreon button on the sidebar on the right-hand side. Or you can go to https://patron.podbean.com/hellblazerbiz. Anyway, enough of that. Today I bring to you an esteemed guest, a fine actor with over 137 credits to his name on IMDb, not to mention all the theatre credits, known as Harris Cochran on Designated Survivor, Judge Richard Woodall in Turn, Washington Spies, Horace Bryant on Downton Abbey, and most famously, I think, for people around the world, as his role as Captain Jack Sparrow's trusty friend and chief, Mr. Gibbs, in Pirates of the Caribbean movies. I'm excited to bring to you Mr. Kevin McNally. Okay, so today, everybody, I have the absolute honour and delight of the company of Kevin McNally, who we know from Designated Survivor, but I think a lot more people will know him in the film world as Mr. Gibbs from Pirates of the Caribbean. Hey, Kevin. Good day to you, Kevin.
Hi there.
I'll say good day. You're over in the States, not Australia, so that was an incredibly dumb greeting. So how is it?
Good day.
It is, yeah. It looks like it's a very good day over there, to be fair. It looks nice and sunny.
It's a beautiful day here in Los Angeles, yeah.
As I said, it's like we said before, it beats the dismal grey cloud and rain of North Wales and Liverpool, where I've been today.
Right.
Excellent. So I really appreciate you coming on and doing this for me. I've got a whole load of little questions just to go through and find out a bit more about you and what you're up to and what you've done.
Okay.
And hopefully, have a bit of a good old chat with it. Okay. So starting off, you've been acting a long, long time. I'm not trying to say you're old.
I am, plainly.
And you've been in some absolutely classics as well. I mean, you've had Zed Cars, the original Poldark, James Bond, Life on Mars, and obviously currently Pirates of the Caribbean, Designated Survivor, etc. Do you have a favourite? I mean, it's hard to say, but...
It is. I mean, I'm lucky enough that in the 40-something years that I've been working, 45 years, I've had very little experience of unemployment, which is quite extraordinary, really. So also at an age when a lot of people are slowing down and even heading towards retirement, you know, I'm constantly offered new and exciting projects. So I'm fortunate to be able to say that usually my favorite project is the one I'm about to do. As indeed at the moment, I'm about to go back on stage after 3 years
That's
and
right,
play and King Lear. So I'm, you know, that's what I'm absolutely full of at the moment and very excited about.
Fantastic, and that's obviously where the beard's coming from.
That's right.
I mean, you know, King Lear is one of my all time favourites with Shakespeare as well. Do you prefer stage work or screen work? I mean, obviously you've done a lot. I think a lot of screen in there, but do you enjoy getting back to the theatre?
Very much so, but I mean, I can't say any are particularly, you know, a favourite. One of the great things about being an actor, unlike perhaps being, I mean, a lot of directors or people who work in costume and design, is that you can cross over really easily, you know, from one job to the next.
Yeah.
But I suppose what happens is when I'm on the stage, I'm always thinking, oh, God, I wish I was doing a film right now. And then as soon as I'm doing a film, I think, oh, I'd love to be back on the stage again. But then that's dissatisfied actors for you. I guess in answer to your first question though about favourites, obviously Pirates of the Caribbean has to be up there because it opened up a whole new world for me. You know, I was in my mid-40s and a working character actor in England, and suddenly America became available to me, which has, you know, helped me do some wonderful parts and projects over here, which I'm really glad that helps mix it up a bit. You know?
Brilliant. I mean, yeah, it's just, is that how long it's been going on? 15 years or so?
15 years.
Oh, my God. That's just aged me as well.
I know, doesn't it? It
just flies by. I mean, I've got them all sat on my shelf right there. The Blu-ray is obviously not the latest one, but all the others are sat there. Where, gosh, that goes by so quickly.
I know, doesn't it? It's flown by for me.
I can imagine, yeah. Well, you've been really busy, though. That's time flies when you're having fun, so.
It certainly does.
Excellent. Jamie Spilsbury, obviously talking about your previous career as well, wants to know, how does it feel still being part of the Long Good Friday? Obviously, that film is considered one of the best British gangster film ever, and it's launched so many careers.
Well, it's funny because obviously my part in the Long Good Friday is very, very small. In fact, it wasn't until about 5 years ago when I went to a film festival in Southend did I even see my performance, because when it came out, and in the years following, I was blessed to have a number of girlfriends who just couldn't get anywhere on time. So I would always get to see the film just after the titles when I was already dead. So it took me about 35 years to see my performance.
Wow.
But it is great to be part of it. And people still come up and say, you know, oh, you're in The Long Good Friday. It's my favorite film.
Yeah.
And of course, sadly, you know, we've lost our director and our leading actor now, so it makes it all the more poignant for me, really.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, it's just a classic, which I think you can watch at any time, and it just, you know, it just hits home. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it hasn't aged really.
No, not at all. No, it's a fantastic film. I mean, you've had many I'm sure you've had many fantastic moments as well during your career. As I say, I've mentioned some of the briefly, some of the many credits you've got to your name of what you've done. Are there any particular ones which still bring a smile to your face? Obviously, Pirates at the moment, yes. But
yeah, I look back very fondly at a number of early things that I did, in particular I, Claudius, because that has, you know, become a classic of the sort of television we used to make in the 70s, that studio-bound television. Although it was so brilliantly made, it really bears up well, and I know that generations of people keep refinding it. I'm also very fond of the original Poldark series, because I remember as a young man going down to Cornwall and sort of filming, you know, away from home for the first time ever in my career, and discovering the joys of being away from home and filming and acting and misbehaving, and it was just terrific. So I look back at that very fondly. Yes.
Oh, lovely. It's nice to see, you know, you've got fond memories of very many things, and part of the original Poldark. I think I did watch I, Claudius. I mean, I was born in 75, so it's reruns for me. But I did.
So you watched it when you were one.
So I watched the reruns in the 80s. And
oh, right.
But yeah, I was very much into those kind of dramas, you know, when I was there. When I was a sort of a tween, do they call them? So yeah, it was very brilliant series. And as you say, there's so many people refinding it because they do stand the test of time. That kind of subject,
yes,
definitely.
And, you know, there's some extraordinary things in it. 20 years ago now, we had the 20th anniversary, and I remember it very well. And we watched Herbie Wise, who again isn't with us anymore. Herbie Wise put together this lovely compilation, and there were a number of things that I noticed about it. One was that there's a scene in a big market and a scene at the Colosseum, all shot in Studio One at the now defunct Television Center.
Yeah.
For all the world looking like an exterior filming. I remember an extraordinary scene between George Baker and John, which a very complex scene that was done in one shot while they played a version of Roman squash. Absolutely extraordinary. And of course, one can never forget that incredible scene when, which Caesar was it? I can't remember. Brian Blessed played him. When he died, being poisoned by Sean Phillips. And Sean Phillips had this huge speech, and the entire shot was on Brian's face as he died, and his eyes went dead. And he kept his eyes like that, I think, for 11 minutes. Absolutely extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Some wonderful, wonderful uses of that type of TV.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, you know, I mean, Brian Blessed as well. So I saw him speak last year and I was crying with laughter. He's a very funny man, but he is a talented actor. People don't seem to see that, I think, or they don't know him from certain things like I, Claudius. And
No, exactly. Yeah, a brilliant actor.
Yeah, very much so. Very good Shakespearean actor too. I mean, a lot of people see him in like Flash Gordon and think that's pretty much, you know, that's how they know him. It's like Gordon. Yeah, and God bless him, he takes every opportunity he can to say it still.
Yes, it is.
But yeah, no, that's brilliant. If there's any other kind of character, literary or even non-literary, who would it be that you'd like to play?
Do you mean a real person?
It could be a real person or it can be a literary character, yeah.
Well, I have two things I want to play. I want to play a spaceman and a cowboy.
Okay.
Having been a pirate for so long, I want to ring the changes a little bit. I've played a little part in a small sci-fi film, but I really want to be in a sci-fi film. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing I would like better than being a cowboy. And in fact, I'll just hold on one second while I show you how I've been practicing. Back. Fill in with some witty banter.
Yep. Well, we can always have a look at your the lovely trees in the background you've got there while we're waiting. I hope you're not going to come riding in on a big stallion here.
No, I would love to, but I can't. So if there's any film directors out there who are making a cowboy film, I have got my own hat.
Well, hey, look at that.
That would save you at least $40, $50 on the budget. So,
oh, yeah, definitely, definitely.
Then with me.
There you go. Everyone he's got his own hat, which is... It's a start. It's a start.
It's halfway.
It's halfway there, yeah. You just need the boots.
Got the boots.
Well, there you go.
All they've got to supply really is the gun, and then I'm away. And the horse.
Yeah, fair enough, yeah. No. Can't be a cowboy without a horse. No. Be a Clint Eastwood type. What kind of cowboy would you be? The dark and moody like Clint Eastwood's, or...
Well, I'd like to do that, but I suspect I'd be the old fella going, there's gold in them there hills. That's probably what I would be.
Yeah. Ye oldie prospector.
Yes, exactly. I'd be the sort of Walter Houston, I think, from Treasure of the Sierra Madre, something like that.
Fair enough, fair enough. And the pirates, obviously moving to the pirates movies here a bit, the global phenomena that they are. That's the one. Huge hits with extremely talented cast and all, with present company included in that. I'm made sure I didn't sound really say excluded. When I was trying to make sure included, because you are. How does it feel to be part of that movie franchise? We've touched on it before. I mean,
it's extraordinary because, you know, any actor, particularly a character actor of a certain age, can probably expect to reach maybe 20,000 people in the course of a career. You know, in the theatre.
Yeah.
And certainly, most of the films that you're in are small hits to failures. So to actually be part of that small group of people who become part of a global phenomenon where virtually everybody who asks you what you've been in and you say, you know, Josh McGibson, Pirates of the Caribbean, you virtually meet nobody on the planet who doesn't go, oh, I know that film, I love that, I really like that character. So that's a very rare thing for any actor to have, and shouldn't be taken for granted, I don't think, because it's a really good feeling.
Excellent. I mean, yeah, it must be. I mean, it's taken off. Did you think when it started, when you first started filming, that it would be such a hit?
No. I mean, I know, of course not. There hadn't been a pirate film since the 50s, I don't think, since Tyrone Power and Errol Flynn made their films. And there'd been a couple of attempts. I think Cutthroat Island had been a big bomb as a film. So No, not at all. I mean, the fact that people like Jeffrey Rush and Johnny Depp were interested in being in it made me think, well, they know what they're talking about, and perhaps they'll, perhaps they see something that I can't see in it.
Yeah.
But even with that, you, no one would have expected it to make $1 billion, the first film, and then 15 years later to be looking at the release of the fifth film. Nobody can anticipate that. If you could predict that, you know, come over to Hollywood and run a studio, you'll make an absolute fortune.
Definitely, I can imagine. I mean, yeah, you're right. You also missed out Muppet Treasure Island. That's an absolute classic.
An absolute classic. No, I would have liked to have been in Muppet Treasure Island. You know, the funny thing is, I started my career at Birmingham Rep in 1972, playing Jim Hawkins in Treasure Island.
Really?
So pirates have been something of a motif.
Fair enough.
I also played a pirate, animated pirate in Assassin's Creed.
So, you did, yes.
The video game. Yes. So, you know, I'm sort of a bit of an expert on pirates, really.
I think so, yeah. You can say it's a recurring theme, and yeah. Anyone needs to go in to talk about pirates, come speak to Kevin.
Come to speak to me.
Yeah. Do you see... Oh, even got the T-shirt as well.
Pittsburgh Pirates T-shirt on.
So you're just oozing pirate.
I am.
Do you see Mr. Gibbs as a kind of a live-action Smee? Some couple of people have mentioned that to me. They said, obviously, he's been the right-hand man. I think he's a bit harder, to be honest, than Smee, but...
Than Smee? Mm. Yeah, no, I think he is a bit harder. I mean, you know, he isn't quick to fight. He'd rather, you know, he's a lover, not a fighter, and would like to drink. But I have introduced in him... when I have had to fight, and I usually get it in most of the films, that if he starts fighting, he sort of goes berserk.
Yeah.
You know, so I can't imagine Smee being a berserker.
No.
So, you know, I mean, once he gets his blood up, he's ready to go, you know. I think you have to fire it, you know.
Well, you do, otherwise you'll end up at the bottom of the sea.
You certainly will.
Yeah, that's the one. See, I wanted you to come out with a good old... Mr. Gibbs' voice there. Brilliant. I mean, Mr. Gibbs, throughout the series of the films, he's delivered some excellent lines. And there's one at the moment from the fifth. I apologise for anyone who's not seen it, but it's not really a spoiler as much. But the line that I think is in a trailer, so it's fine, it's everyone's talking about. And we howled. We watched it 2 weeks ago, and I've got to say, absolutely adored the film. Really, really was. The whole family loved it.
Good film, I think. Yeah.
It is. It's very, very good. Definitely brings it back with everything in it. But obviously your line, prepare to drown, is the timing and the delivery of it. People are talking about it all over. It's Do you enjoy...
Little, well, you read a line like that and you know that it's a gift from heaven, you know.
Yeah, and it was. I mean, the writers write the stuff, but it's the delivery that you guys perform on it. And
Right.
I saw that on Twitter when I was looking on Twitter and looking at the hashtags for Pirates 5. That's what a majority of people were talking about, were howling at your delivery of...
I didn't really realise it was going to be such a memorable line, but the moment people started seeing it, they all mentioned it. Yeah,
it's a very, very good line, but brilliantly done. Perfectly done. No problem. Donna Jo and myself would also like to know, what's it like working with Johnny Depp? I'm sure you get this question a lot.
I do. I get it a lot. And every third time I just say, absolutely terrible, I can't stand that. But the truth is, it's great working with Johnny, and particularly for me, because, you know, over the five films, you know, I've worked with him mainly. So yeah. He's an absolute pleasure to work with. He's a, you know, great leading man, but also a good team member. We spend a lot of time stranded on boats together. So he's a great raconteur. He's a good listener, so you know we have a really good time, and it's very special, that relationship between Jack Sparrow and Joshua Mee Gibbs. So it's something I like very much. I was very pleased in the fourth film when I got to the end and Jack and I walk off into the sunset together. I thought that was absolutely splendid.
It is,
and sort of my, although perhaps not my favourite of the franchise, it's certainly my favourite ending of any of the films.
definitely, it was a nice poignant ending, and you're right, there is a relationship between Mr. Gibbs and Jack all the way there. And when you look at the credits as well, you can see how important, you know, your build six in the credits, you know, that's a nice achievement to have in such a big film as well.
It's very nice, particularly as they wouldn't, in the first film, they wouldn't they wouldn't give me any guarantees on billing, so I went to see the film and couldn't believe that I was up there, as we call it, single card, in nice high letters. I was very pleased about that.
I can imagine. That's a very nice achievement to have. I mean, is it hard to keep a straight face with Johnny Depp? Is he the kind of person who would like, joke off camera and mess around, or... I mean,
yeah, of course he is. You can see that, can't you? It is very
exactly.
With the, there have been a few moments that we've achieved that have been sort of just because they've let the camera run a little bit. There's some really nice looks and moments that, you know, that just come from a sort of a rapport and an ease with the job, really.
Yeah.
And I think that's a hallmark of any great screen actor that. They're always alive and always being inventive and always coming up with something new.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant, yeah. I mean, it must be good. And like you say, you can see the relationship, I think. When I've spoken to quite a few actors on my show, and the shows that I watch and the films that I watch, you can always tell that there's a good relationship with the cast themselves off screen. I mean, actors are professional. I mean, it's a hard enough profession to learn. So you're all professional, and you put across the best you can do. But there's extra something special, I think, on screen, and it can be seen when you're watching something that, you know, the cast. Yeah. There's definitely you know, chemistry is what I'm trying to. You know, and I mean, over 20 years, you're bound to have built up a good one.
And you see it in I mean, it's interesting that, you know, the wonderful Adam West has just passed away. And that films and that TV show, there was such a sense of enjoyment in it. And apparently they were joys to make and everyone doing
it. Those Batman shows were what they said was a joy to work on. You can see that as well. I love the dancing one with the Pharaoh before they... It's probably one of the most famously shared clips going, but it was great. It was perfect.
The wonderful meme on Twitter about Mr. West at the moment, which is him trying to get rid of the bomb in the movie. And, you know, he runs one way and there's a load of nuns. He runs the other way and there's a baby in a carriage. So he just puts it over and does this manic run to try to throw it into the ocean. It's very, very funny stuff.
It is. And I love the way he made it comedies, but made it a sort of a funny role. It was him and Bert were brilliant. They were. It was another classic, which they say he'll be sadly missed.
He will be.
Yeah. What's the kind of best experience, following on from those questions, the best experience you've had working on these films? I mean, it's like you say, 20 years now, really, so...
Well, 15, but...
15, sorry.
Interestingly enough, one of the really nice things that happened was that after the first three films, where we mainly shot in the studio here in Los Angeles, and then we went for quite brief periods of time to the Caribbean to do beaches and ships... It's amazing how used to wonderful things you can get. We all got a bit fed up with the Caribbean, and I don't know why it happened, but we went and made the fourth one in Hawaii, and that was a truly great experience because it's a place I'd never been, and a place often the British people don't go because it's so far away.
Yeah.
And we spent a glorious 6 weeks on the North Island of Kauai. That was just a great experience, and I remember sitting in between the pool and the beach with my daughter and just saying, I have got the greatest job on the planet. Here I am doing another pirate film and I'm spending most of my time lounging by a beach. You know, it's just perfect. I wouldn't swap it. I'm so glad I chose this over astrophysics.
Yeah.
I think I made a right career choice that day.
I made the wrong one when I was 18 because I was in drama and I loved theatre and that's what I wanted to be, but I was steered down the with all the right reasons, and obviously, you know, I'll never knock it, into a career in speaking German and going into something like IT. So 20 years on, I'm desperately trying to get back into what I thought I should have gone into. So yeah, you've done well, and like you say, you were said earlier on, it's you've been so lucky to be the fact that you've very rarely been unemployed as well, because within the acting world, you know, 90% or 95% of the time, an actor is unemployed. And so it is really, you know, touch wood.
I know. It's funny. I remember an actor saying to me about 20 years ago, I think it was during the sort of 90s recession, and it was really bad for actors. And he said he was at a party and he heard someone say, apparently things are so bad, even Kevin McNally's not working. Which was a nice sort of trope to have attached to my name.
Yeah, definitely. That's quite amusing, actually.
It wasn't true, by the way. I was working, but you could see their point.
Yeah, yeah. But again, it's nice to have that kind of, like you say, that trope made after you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hard-working man. Excellent. So, okay, so the next question is going to be from my son, Ethan, who's got a couple of questions he'd like to ask you there.
Okay, Ethan, would you like to talk to Kevin?
I have a question. Are you going to be creating another Pirates of the Caribbean movie? That's like a throwback on the Gibbs's life.
Like a spin-off of Gibbs's life.
Well, if it was up to me, I would have already done that. But unfortunately, it's not my decision. It's Disney's decision. I think it's really an interesting question because, you know, the Marvel films are very good at having those, you know, past stories and taking characters and making them the leads. But our stories, our pirates, tended, for some reason, Disney liked to make them a bit more one after the other, you know. So I'm not so sure that will happen. However, when they brought the new pirate film out, I noticed they said The Final Adventure. Well, I've got this little sentence in my head that says, Pirates of the Caribbean 6, The Final Adventure Continues. So maybe we'll see Mr. Gibbs in that. But I don't think Mr. Gibbs will get his own film, no.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, I might get a job playing Santa Claus with this beard. What do you think?
I know, it's pretty fetching. Okay, second one you wanted to ask was from...
This question was from Robin
Woodenham.
Robin Woodenham.
Yeah.
Where's all the rum gone?
It's here. Going down my neck. No, this is diet cola. But sometimes there is rum in there, but not at this time of the morning.
Excellent, cool. Thank you, Ethan. Okay. Say goodbye to...
Bye.
Cheers, Ethan. See you later.
Bye.
Okay, thank you very much, Ethan. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Ethan. Very good.
Brilliant. Appreciate the answer in there. I say it's not something I normally do, but he's such a huge Pirates of the Caribbean fan. He didn't have to drag us either. That's the other thing. Normally he would drag us to see like Power Rangers or something like that, which, to be fair, I actually enjoyed. But when it comes to Pirates of the Caribbean, there's no dragging involved. It's like me dragging him. We're going.
Great.
It's brilliant. Okay, moving on. I've kind of got... actually, it's one about King Lear. It's, well, kind of. It's Oliver Egger, who's at McNally Fan on Twitter. He's asking, what have you got any other projects on besides King Lear at the moment, or how long is King Lear going to be playing for?
Well, King Lear's playing till October the 14th, so I don't really have my mind on anything else but that.
Oh, yes.
Wonderful will happen at the end of it. But I'm just going to concentrate on that at the moment.
Well, yeah, obviously, if that's fair enough. You know, but as I say, being in theatre is different to being in the film in the fact that, yeah. And I guess...
Well, yeah, I might come away after playing King Lear for 3 months and decide I might... Let's sit on a beach for a couple of weeks, you know.
Yeah, bugger this. Yeah, I'm going back to...
Probably what I want.
Yeah, going back
Absolutely.
To my...
I'm going back away.
Exactly. Where are you playing King Lear? Which theatre is it?
At the Globe Theatre.
The Globe where, sorry?
The Globe Theatre in London.
Oh, right. You sort of broke up then.
Shakespeare's Globe Theatre, yeah.
Oh, wow. You couldn't pick a better place to play Shakespeare play.
No, exactly. Yeah. A recreation of the original Globe Theatre. It's going to be very exciting for me, I tell you. They sent me a mock-up of the poster today, and it knocked me for six of it because I realised there was no getting out of it now. I'm going to have to turn up and do it.
Yeah. That's it now. You're locked in. I'll be good now. I'll try and see if I can get tickets to come and see that, actually, because I've not been to the Globe yet. I enjoy going to seeing a good play.
Experience, yeah.
Okay. Julie Robinson is, what rock star would you like to have appear on any future Pirates film as one of Jack's family? I think we've had quite a few.
We've had a few. I mean, we've had... Keith Richards and Paul McCartney. So I personally think somebody would make a great pirate would be Billy Joel. And I'm a great fan of Billy Joel, so I'd like to have him turn up. I also think maybe, you know, when you think about those scenes at the court in London in 4, that you might have Elton John turn up in his sort of his wig and his finery as
Yeah, very true.
Maybe something like that.
Yeah.
So Elton Billy, I think we should have.
Yeah, that would have been good. Like you say,
would probably be a very good pirate.
Yeah, he would. He's got the look about him as well. He's got the ruggedness and I think he'd make a good one. But now I've got Elton John just pictured in my mind with a big beehive wig and sitting at the grand with all the frilled frock coats and he'd fit perfectly. definitely in next time.
I think he doesn't like filming though, so I think it's an unlikely event.
Ah, what a shame. He would have been perfect at a governor's ball.
He would have been, wouldn't he? Yeah.
Ah, oh dear, never mind. Paige Dixon asks, do you wish that more of Jack's crew were in the latest film, i.e. Robbie Kay as cabin boy?
Yes, I miss Robbie, and I miss Mr. Cotton and Pintel and Rigetti. I don't know why it was thought that there should be, like, changing crews. Maybe they just thought it was too coincidental that the same people would be together all the time. I think the fans miss it. I mean, we have great new people coming in.
Oh, definitely.
This particular scraggly crew we have on the latest film is fabulous. But I don't see why there's not room for both myself. But then they're not decisions that I'm asked to make.
Yeah, I think you might have hit it on the head there because it's meant to be. It's obviously set several years after, isn't it?
We were working out. Although it's been 15, it's supposed to have been 20 years because we're looking at Brenton Thwaites, you know, being the boy that. Born.
Mm-hmm.
He was born in the third film, so in a way it's like, okay, 17 years. Say he's 17.
Yeah.
So it's 20 years since the first movie, easily, yeah.
Exactly. Horrifying. So, to have a crew stay around for that long a time would be a...
But you know, we don't really obey the laws of logic in any other department. So why would we do it?
So it's me talking seriously about how to keep a crew when you're sending a ship upside down and
people come back from the dead. You know? I mean, we can do it if we like, really.
Exactly. The laws of physics do not apply to. Excellent. Okay, just quickly as well, talking about. I know I've got a couple more questions here, but I'd like to know more about the. Designated survivor. It's not something I've caught up with yet, but obviously it's a lot of people have recognised you from there as well. Kiefer Sutherland's new show, isn't it? What's that about? I don't mind spoilers, by the way, because it will be on my list.
It's about a designated survivor is a member of the cabinet who doesn't go to the State of the Union address in case something terrible happens.
Right.
He's usually a lowly minister, and so he can take over government and become the president. And indeed, something that terrible does happen. There's an explosion of a bomb that kills the entire government, all three branches of legislature, and he has to take over, being rather ill-equipped for the job as the president.
Wow!
And I play the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who really don't rate him very much.
Right.
and he's very much his arch enemy in the beginning of the show, although he does get the whip hand of me during the course of the season. I mean, I was doing another show in Richmond, Virginia, so I wasn't able to do many of them.
Mm.
But the ones I did, I really enjoyed. And I certainly hope they're going back to do a season two. And I would love to go back and do some more of it, because there's nothing better than getting on a general's outfit and pretending to be an American general. I just adore it.
Fair enough. Was that Turn, was it, that you were filming as well?
In Virginia, that's about the American Revolutionary War, which we've just—they're just about to start showing the fourth and final season of over here. And I think you can get seasons 1 through 3 on Netflix at the moment.
Oh, right, excellent. Again, that's taking you back to the sort of historical period, the old.
Another great thing about Designated Survivor, I was getting fed up of being set in the 18th century. So it's really nice to do something contemporary. Although I'm going back even further now to about 200 BC, I think King Lear is set.
Yeah,
but I don't think we'll be setting it there. But it's pre-Christian Britain. Yeah,
definitely. But it must be a great. One. I keep thinking of King Lear because it's been a long time. I think I did that in my A level as well. I did part of King Lear in my A level. Yeah. I also did Three Men in a Boat. I mentioned this. It came to me the other day. It was It came to me in an interview the other day. It was an interesting fact. Was when I was doing my GCSEs, so like 1992. It was some theatre company had just dramatised Three Men in a Boat, and it was the first time it had ever been put into a screenplay or a script in the theatre. It's obviously, it was the first time ever, and they hadn't even performed it yet. But we were allowed to do it for my GCSE, so we did some of it for my GCSE play. They gave us permission to do it, so I was the first person ever, along with my obviously school friends, to have actually performed Three Men in a Boat. So
well done.
That's my claim to fame.
Yes.
Yes, but yeah, I mean,
you should revive it.
Yes, that'd be fun. It's a cracking play. Very, very. It's very funny. Yeah, it's
are
a good.
Are there any old blokes in it?
There are actually. I think they all are. They're all three men. They're all three oldish men in a boat. So.
Well, I shall have a look at that then.
Yeah, it's a good book.
Maybe the answer to that previous question. Maybe that's my next project.
Maybe it is after King Lear. Yeah. Well, you've already had Patrick Stewart and Ian. McKellen. Thank you. Name slip there. You know, to do a. Was it? I've forgotten enough. You know, Waiting for Godot. That's the one. Thank you. What an awful time for me to get a brain freeze on what I'm talking about. That's another one.
All right,
I'd like
you got
to
my
see.
Brain. You got my backup brain here for you.
Brilliant, excellent. So next question here is again. It's going back to pirates again. Is do you meet up with any of the cast or any of the other pirates? I guess it's hard when you're such busy lives, but
It is. But I do the convention circuit quite a lot, and Lee Arenberg, who plays Pintel,
yeah,
and Marty Kleber, who plays Marty. We meet up there a lot. In fact, I was just at a convention in Altoona, Pennsylvania, with Marty Kleber. We were meeting the people out there.
Oh.
So I see them a lot, and I see Mackenzie Crook back in England when I'm there, although I haven't seen him for a while.
Yeah.
David Bailey, I've met up with a few times. I've seen Jeffrey Rush a few times. But you're right, we're all really busy, so
yeah.
We just see each other, really.
Yeah, it is. I mean, because that's I do ask that question, but yeah, I know that when you're all, like you said, there's so many projects going on. It's you can be in London where most people are in the States or vice versa. It's just until the next.
Yeah.
A lot of people just put it behind them and until the next time you're on. Exactly.
Well, we always hope we say, well, I'll see you on the next pirate film. But we always say to each other.
Well, yeah, that's very true. We shouldn't wait for Pirate 6. What? Okay, that's another one from Paige. Is the last one? Which is your favourite film and your favourite character in that film, and why? There's a lot of questions in that one question.
Well, I'm always shuffling my top five films. Consistently, the films I come up with are Apocalypse Now.
Mm-hmm.
One of my very favourite films. Usually at the top is 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
As far as comedy goes, The Odd Couple is my favourite comedy film. And This is Spinal Tap.
Yep.
I would say is one of my favourite films. And also I really have a soft spot for the films of the 70s, the independent American films of the 70s, it was great. I grew up in that time, and I watched all of those films: The Conversation, you know, Apocalypse Now, The Godfather, yeah. The Scarecrow, and the French Connection films, all that. And the last great film of that era, I think, was Raging Bull.
Mm.
I don't think there's been another great, acting, directing film like that. So, Raging Bull's up there. So they'd be my top five. And of all those characters, I think I'd go for Hal in 2001.
Fine choice. It was a great choice of film. I won't knock you on any of those. Apocalypse Now is just phenomenal. It's just it hits every single time. It really does.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. I mean, you mentioned obviously director of Raging Bull quickly there. Is there any directors that you'd like to work with who you haven't worked with yet?
I'm very envious that my drama school friend Kieran Hines, I spotted him in the latest Martin Scorsese film. I was very very jealous of him for that. I'd love to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
And but obviously everyone would love to work with Spielberg, because you never know what sort of film he's going to come out with next. I would like to have worked with Coppola, but I don't see him making any more films, I don't think. I think what happens when you get to my age is you say, what director we'd like to work with? I would say a young one. You know, one who's going to make plenty more films. You know?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, as I said about favorite projects, if you can be lucky enough to just say I'm looking forward to the next one, then that's a good place to be, I think.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough, that's good. I mean, as you say, there are a lot. I think it's Sophia's taken over from Francis Ford Coppola now, hasn't she?
Yeah,
she's sort of taken the reins. She is, she's a great filmmaker as well. She's definitely going to chip off the old block.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, you mentioned before about attending Comic Cons as well. How do you feel about all your fans? Because, you know, I've seen you say twice at Wales Comic Con, and you've always got a smile on your face, and the reception on the forums and afterwards is that Kevin McNally, please bring him back, he's such a genuinely nice guy. You know, is that do you love going to those?
Yes, I mean, I love them, and I get slightly miffed when I spot people who plainly are going there just for the money and don't enjoy it.
Yeah,
because I think it shortchanges the fans somewhat. I happen to be a people person. I like to meet people, and it's very nice to go somewhere and spend the day and have people very excited to meet you and very friendly, and they want to ask you questions, and it's a very nice way to spend a weekend. And I also get to visit places I would never normally go to. I've been to Helsinki and St. Petersburg. I've been to Wuhan in China.
Wow.
This year. I've just got back from Altoona, maybe doing Sacramento, Worcester. And then just before I start Lear, I'm going to go to the Philippines to do one in Manila.
Wow.
So it's a wonderful way to travel on someone else's dollar.
That's the big one, yeah.
They don't have any drawbacks for me, the conventions at all.
Brilliant. I know you've said there a couple as well, as there's some, I won't name and shame, but there have been several times where I've gone to cons and you can tell where they are just there for the money. I mean, I'll just say there was a wrestler one time and he just lost my total respect because I used to wrestle, believe it or not, about 3 years ago at the age of 38. I took up wrestling and I dropped 4 stone. I was flipping in the ring, was jumping off the top rope, time of my life until I fell out of the ring and hurt my leg. But there was one wrestler, I was trying to talk to him and he just brushed me off. It was just like, I was trying to get some advice and he was just like, yeah man, what, and carried on talking about money to his agents. So I was like, right, you know, screw you basically. And there was another one.
Yeah.
I took a picture because I know this is at Wales, and I was, when you're standing in the queue, sometimes I take a sneaky picture while I'm waiting to meet you. You know, and I know it probably does pee you guests off sometimes. But literally physically turned back on me, turned the coat, saw me, and then got me told off by the person she was with for taking a picture. So I was just like, fine, sorry. Walked off the queue then. I was like, I was coming to pay money to meet you
he
anyway.
He must have been so funny there, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, so yeah.
Did meet, it was brought home to me, a little kid came up to me and I had a long chat to him, and he had just met somebody from another favorite film of his, and he told me how, this is a kid of 9,
yeah,
how rude that person had been and how he would never watch his films again because he was so disappointed in this person.
Wow.
And I think, you know, one hopes that if the person knew that, they would check themselves in future and not be unnecessarily unpleasant.
Exactly. I mean, everyone has a bad day, so, you know, that's not, you know, I mean, God knows I'm a grump some of the time. But if
you're going to something like that, if you're going in front of the public in any event, it's sort of your professional duty not to be having a bad day. You know?
Well, yeah, exactly. You always got to, you get paid. You sat there, okay, it's a tiring day just waiting there. But like you say, you know, if people are coming,
it's a bloody tiring day. If you're just sitting there signing and you're not bothering to engage with anyone.
Yeah, but
if you talk to everyone and answer their questions and you know, have photographs with them and stuff, the day whizzes by and it's not tiring at all. And there's always a bar at the end of it, you know. So it's a no-brainer, really. You're going to enjoy it more if they enjoy it more.
Exactly. I think that's what a lot of people do say. I say from the Wales Comic Cons, when I know you've been there, I think when I was there, you were sat next to Ian McAlinney. Both of you were coming, but everyone's like, oh, because Kevin McNally, because he came round, he got pictures with us, he talked to us for ages, he wanted to, you do leave that impression, and you know, obviously that's why I wanted to bring you on as a guest, because you do leave such an impression with people that they go away happy because the person that they've watched on TV and watching films and they like has just spent time to sit and talk. And
you've got to be a really weird person if you want to send people away sad, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I can't see why that's an objective in life.
I know, yeah. You just sit there and just go, ooh. It's like, you know, just like, yeah, yep. There are some who do it, though. There are some who do it.
No, I've seen it, believe me.
You've been to many more cons than I only ever go to Wales Comic Con. We're going to the new one in September, hopefully, as well. Depends on a job. Ooh.
Sorry. It's just my computer telling me my storage would fall, which is a lie.
No, that's okay. No problem. Okay, I've got one question for you now, and it's kind of a comedy question, which I've asked everybody. I had a guy called Mike Quinn on my show last year, who's been a puppeteer with Jim Henson for about 20-odd years. And the question spurned. Someone asked him the question to him, and I thought, you know what? That's a hell of a good question I'm going to ask of everybody. If you were to have a Muppet made after you, what kind of Muppet character would you be? And why?
Well, I would... Do you mention one of the real Muppets?
It can be a real Muppet, or it can be one you make up, a combination of several. It can be anything you want.
I've always had a very soft spot for the drummer, Animal.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll stick with Animal, thank you very much. Because I could do all that crazy stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. My son, who you met before, was a drummer.
My son's a musician, and we have a drum kit at home. And
really?
There's nothing better than taking out the day's frustrations on a drum kit. So it works both ways for me.
Oh, it does. My son's actually the one you met earlier. He's learning drums at the moment.
Oh, good.
Yeah, my dad left him his drum kit. My dad passed away in 2009, but he was a semi-pro... He's a minister of religion, but he was also a semi-pro drummer. Brilliant. He used to obviously preach on Sunday.
Drumming for Jesus, right?
exactly. So he'd preach, obviously, in everything on a Sunday, but he'd play at Ronnie Scott's on a Saturday night sometimes. You know, he's played with Dudley Moore and everybody. And so he's passed the drum kit down to my son, who decided to take it up. And it is.
You'll probably find in a few years' time, where I had a real drum kit for a while, that you might start looking in your piggy bank and go in and get an electric one with a pair of headphones.
Yeah.
That's a very good investment.
That's already been looked at.
Yeah,
it's I mean,
when they start to stay up a bit later.
Yes, you know? definitely. Man, I play the trumpet. Well, I used to play the trumpet, and he's trying to get me back there because he's got a concert in November, and he's roped me in to doing the Blues Brothers with his teacher. His drum teacher plays guitar, so he's going to be Elwood. I'm going to be Jake, plus being a trumpet player as well, and my son's going to be doing the drums, all in the black. So,
well, I hope you'll be putting that on some sort of webcast.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be going there somewhere.
See that, yes.
Yes, it'll be fun. Excellent. Is there anything you'd like to say as I wrap this up before I stop recording? Anything you'd like to say to the people listening?
No, I entreat people to go and see the new pirate film, because it's well worth it. And get on Twitter at @XKevinMcNally and let me know what you thought of it.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin, for your time. An absolute pleasure to talk with you, sir. Thank you to all of you for sending questions in. I hope you all enjoyed this episode. This has been Chris Gordon on Hellblazer Biz with Pirates of the Caribbean's own Mr. Gibbs, Kevin McNally.